This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
8 minutes after 11 o'clock in Power Perspective, I am Sebenzile Nkambule. Thank you for that last hour as well. And to my guest, Umelusi from Corruption Watch. Remember, the line's still open for you, 0861-987-000. Tweet at Seben Nkambule and at PowerFM 987. All right, we're having a conversation now with COSATU's parliamentary coordinator, Matthew Parks. We're talking about their mission to have the social relief support or grant made permanent and increased to 624 rand. This call they made during a submission of public hearings on the second special appropriation bill public hearings. The reasoning for this? Well, additional support required as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and also as a result of the aftermath of those riots, the civil unrest that we saw in July. The question, of course, remains is where will the money come from? Thank you for your time, Mr. Parks. Good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Let's start there. Where will the money come from?
The loss of the money within the fiscus. It will mean some significant reprioritization within the fiscus will have to take place. That will mean some cuts to departments. But I think it's a necessary and a worthwhile cause. The extension of the current COVID-19 grant, the 350, has cost about 26 billion rand. So in essence, over a year, you'd be looking at about just under 50 billion rand, possibly less than that, depending on how many people they're able to get it out to. That's a large number, but in the broader scheme of the budget of about 1.8 trillion rand, that's a very small amount of money. The impact it has on communities, upon people who have no source of income, is huge. It's managed to help many people buy food, take care of their families, but also it's actually been shown by research to actually help these recipients to pay for transport, to go and look for work and to find jobs and to get them moving again. But the money also is not lost to the economy. Money is spent buying food, paying for transport, electricity. Money is spent in the local economy, which helps stimulate it. Some of that money also does go back to government in the form of VAT or municipal electricity tariffs, etc. But I think we've also seen the violence in KZN and Gauteng. Leave aside the political and criminal orchestration behind the violence, but it still did feed into an absolute sea of poverty, despair, of hopelessness. And I think the cost that you would have seen was over 150 billion rand, according to many estimates, to the economy. That might still continue for some time because of the damage it's done to South Africa as an investment destination for local and international investments. Compare that to spending 50 billion rand to help people to take care of themselves, to buy food. I think it's a worthwhile investment. We think it's affordable because also we're not insensitive to the fiscal pressures facing the state, which are very, very serious. Mm. So we felt it reasonable to say, let's extend the 350. How can we begin to increase it to be in line with the food poverty level of about 624? It might mean you must phase it in over a couple of years, but let's see how we can move it in that direction. We think it's quite affordable.
Let's discuss that number of 624. How did you get to that number?
Sure, that's a number that's been found by many researchers, academics, statistics, SA, who've said in the average basket of food, the essential food items, it costs roughly about 624 rand for that minimum level. And so they're trying to look at what is the absolute minimum amount of food people need to survive on for basic nutrition, for basic health, etc. So the basic types of food, nothing fancy. Obviously, even 624 is still a small amount, very small for most people with salaries. But it's still something. And even as many people might have mocked the 350 as being insufficient, the fact that you have queues of hundreds of people every single day at post offices, people waiting to receive it, it shows you the impact these relief measures do have on the people and how critical and desperate they are to receive it and really how it can help move things along.
You're also not only proposing this increase in the amount, so from the 350 to the 624 rand, you also want this to be in place long term.
Yes, I mean, we've been talking about some sort of a basic income grant for many years, not just as COSATU, but even other political organizations, the ANC and many other political parties, civil society, churches, etc. I think even many in government and including the president has spoken quite eloquently about it. So I think for us, the basic premise is that when the economy is in its deepest recession in 100 years, when you've reached absolute poverty levels, 44.4% unemployment, many people are not receiving social grants, don't have jobs, don't receive the unemployment insurance fund. So what do you do to help them? We think it's when your economy is in its greatest need, that's when you need to provide the most amount of assistance. And as the economy picks up, as it reopens, as companies get back to operations, jobs are created, people are receiving salaries, less and less people would need assistance, and people can be moved off of their social security into jobs, etc., and you would lessen the burden on the state. More people would be contributing to taxes. But when people are desperate for help, that's when you really need to go all out to help them. But we don't think it's in a reckless way. It's not a grant of, you know, 7,500 rand or something which should be unaffordable to the state. 350, let's get it to 624. That's an affordable amount. We think it's pragmatic and it's fair. And we had actually also raised it in the immediate aftermath of the violence when we tabled our kind of relief package proposals, COSATU and NEDLAC, to government. And government immediately agreed it had to be done, and they agreed with the logic that it needed to be done across the country. Because, you know, we always do have periodic protests around service delivery and poverty across the country. And we simply can't afford to leave people behind as we rebuild and pick up the pieces in terms of growing the economy again.
Is there an appropriate time, Mr. Parks, in your view, for when you should, as a country, right, if you are considering a universal income grant, when you should do it, right? So this feels as though it's a moment where we are under immense pressure, and the moment spans several years. But it feels as though we are under immense pressure, and where a call of this nature, where in fact you have a lot more people who perhaps several years ago would not have been in these queues, in these long queues that we see to get these 350 rands to support themselves and their families, you now have an unprecedented number of people. The situation has been exacerbated. What does this particular period of immense pressure do for any attempt of implementing that sort of thing versus a time where perhaps the economy is performing a little better, where you have fewer people who are dependent upon the state, and so you at least you have a lot more breathing room to roll it out and in fact see to what extent in fact the fiscus can handle it?
Yeah, look, there's many contradictions that you need to balance at once. Ideally, you would have a society where everybody has a job, where people are not dependent upon the state for social security.
Yes.
People earn a salary, and a decent salary. And there might be a variety of social wage kind of relief measures, like free education, free healthcare, etc., subsidized transport. But by and large, people would be independent. That's a ideal scenario. You don't want to be a society of everybody being dependent upon the state for social security. The fact we have 17 million plus people dependent upon the state for social grants is a very worrying situation. It's a positive intervention by government to try to help people, and that's important and must be appreciated. But it's very worrying that if you look at the stats, it say figures that the largest source of income in the Eastern Cape and Limpopo, 30%, is from social grants. If you combine it with remittances from relatives who work in the cities, in the Western Cape or Gauteng or KZN, sending back money, then it's over 50%. So you really want the majority source of income should be from salaries, like you find in the big cities, in the three centers. So it is quite worrying. That's not sustainable. That is a ticking time bomb, because it will eventually put the state in very difficult situations. It is an indictment upon society's economic policies for the last two decades. We've not managed to tackle unemployment. It's actually gotten worse and worse over many years. We're not growing the jobs, we're not building new economic sectors, expanding them, etc. But those are things which must be tackled. But equally, in the meantime, when you do that, because the people in the post office queues can't wait for tomorrow, for next year, for 5 years for the economy to pick up. They need to buy food today, pay for electricity today to cook. This is an immediate relief. So this is an immediate relief. It's a medium-term relief. In the longer term, we want to get these people working, and then to have less people dependent upon the state and more people contributing to the state in terms of tax contributions, to then give the state greater scope to provide more precision relief and social security, more investments in the economy, social services, etc. But for right now, we have to be pragmatic. What's possible? And that's why we said to government, let's reinstate this 350 grant after the violence across the country. Let's then see how we can retain it and how can we improve upon it. Because in essence, it is a stepping stone for a basic income grant. But our immediate thing was just to get immediate relief. And I think we're quite pleased that, 11 million people, I think, roughly applied for it. Mm. About 8 million people are qualified and are beginning to receive it. And that's a huge immediate relief measure. And buy some breathing space for them and for society to then see what's the next step going forward.
Mm-hmm. My guest this evening is Matthew Parks, who is COSATU's parliamentary coordinator. We're talking about their call for social relief to be increased to 624 rands from that 350 rands. These particular submissions were made at the public hearings on the second special appropriation bill public hearings. Give us a ring on 0861 987 000.
Live on channel 889 on DSTV Audio Bouquet. Power 98.7. Now we're talking.
23 after 11 o'clock here on Power Perspective, wrapping up my conversation with Matthew Parks, who is COSATU's parliamentary coordinator. Thank you for staying with us, Mr. Parks. As we wrap it up, you also spoke a bit about the allocation of support to the SANDF. We saw their deployment at the start of the management of the pandemic. We then also, of course, saw the role that they played during the unrest in July, where they were required to assist police officers in restoring order in communities. Why was this also an important area as COSATU to speak to?
Sure. I think we must appreciate the role the Defence Forces played in restoring law and order in Gauteng and KZN after the violence. And it's in giving support to the police during the course of the lockdown. I think we appreciate the role they played in many other townships in the Cape Flats, struggling with gang violence. And, of course, the Defence Force played a very positive role in helping to build peace and security in other parts of Africa and the DRC, etc. But we've been concerned for quite some years, and also with the police as well, how, because of budget cuts, the capacity has begun to dwindle. We saw how long it took the Defence Force to deploy during this violence. We've seen the conditions in the bases where Defence Force personnel train. In Oudtshoorn, for example, there's a lack of working toilets. Personnel couldn't isolate themselves when they got infected with COVID-19 in Oudtshoorn at the infantry school. We've seen Air Force bases in Louis Trichardt or Makado, Hoedspruit, etc., where the fences have been taken apart by vandalism. Bases are no longer secure. We've seen the Air Force pilots having insufficient training hours, which has an impact upon their skill levels, their ability to perform their job. So it is a worrying, because as we've seen now, none of us expected this violence, but we saw when it happened. We ran to the Defence Force to help the police restore law and order, which was critical to saving lives, saving jobs, saving the economy, and allowing society to reopen peacefully. If we starve the Defence Force too much, equally the police as well, we'll pay a heavy price later when we do call upon them. And that's quite worrying, because you cannot build a Defence Force overnight. It takes years and years of investment and training and material and capacity. Same thing with the police. We've also been quite worried, we raised it as well in the same hearing. The President announced in the State of the Nation address last year that we're going to increase the police personnel by 7,000, because in fact our police to population ratio is actually quite low. But instead, what we've seen is, because of the budget cuts, the police numbers have actually declined by 7,000. So there's a shortage of at least 14,000 police officers. And again, this makes it very difficult for police officers who are quite paid quite low to perform their work. Heavily overstretched. There are some inefficiencies in the Defence Force and the police in particular, where there are too many police officers deployed to the head office, to the provincial offices, to desk jobs, and not enough police deployed to community policing, visible policing, specialised units like intelligence, etc. So those are quite worrying things, and we can't afford to be complacent, because if we neglect it, we will pay a heavy price later, and it will be communities and townships which will pay the price because of lawlessness, gangsterism, etc.
Are you calling for the just merely support, as in, or the allocation of more funds, right, to improve conditions for both the force and the police service, or are you calling for the expansion?
Basically, two things. One is that we need to reassess how much funds we do give to them, and we do appreciate that it's a huge contrast between what you give to schools, to health, which are all struggling, which all experience severe cuts.
Yes.
The cuts in the police have been a bit more severe than others. And of course, if you don't have safety and security, then everything else will fall through the cracks. But also, this is about issue of management. The Department of Defense is the worst supplier when it comes to paying companies on time, suppliers. 90% of late payments in the public service come from the Department of Defense. There have been significant allegations of corruption against very senior generals in the Defense Force. Very little done to address it. So I think it is also a management failure, the issue of corruption and wasteful expenditure. And it's a failure of political leadership that from the past 10 years, there has been a lack of political leadership in the Defense Force. That has partly resulted in some of these issues, because often the issues of corruption are not about too little money, it's about mismanagement, it's about looting. And you've seen many instances in the police as well, especially in crime intelligence over many years, serious allegations of corruption. And there seems to be a real blockage around whenever attempts are made to clean it up, there's significant resistance within the police from compromised elements. So what I think for us was most critical is about cleaning up the police and the Defense Force, even the intelligence services as well, where there's been a huge amount of mismanagement and corruption over many, many years, especially the last decade. And that really needs to be tackled if you want to get to the bottom of the issues.
That's where we'll leave it. That's where we'll leave it, Mr. Parks. Quite comprehensive indeed. I think the call is a strong one. And let's see if indeed there'll be positive results, at least in the near future, given the state of play of all of the country broadly, but the areas that you've mentioned as well. Thank you very much for joining us on Power Perspective.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. That's Matthew Parks there, who is COSATU's Parliamentary Coordinator.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.